Meeting. Thanks, Kat. And I guess Franco, since you're our co-chair here today, do you want to go ahead and facilitate?
Sure. I guess this is my first official facilitating day, so please bear with me as I go through this. So I guess we can start with introductions and welcome. So Kira, do you usually do roll call or how do we go?
We don't usually do a roll call. Everyone
Okay.
can introduce themselves as they'd like, or you can pick on people. It's up to you.
All right, so I'll just go in order of as I see people on my screen. So Thomas.
Excellent. Thomas Noble, government coach, share they them pronouns.
I'm Kat.
Pat Tochkir, council staff.
I'm Lee.
Oh no, we
Believe you
can't
might
hear
be
you,
muted.
Lee.
It looks like you have your mic on, but is your volume up?
Camera's off now. Let me
No,
put
that's a
cue.
better.
All right.
Thanks, I had to readjust my where it was coming from.
Oh, we got this great frozen image of you. But we can hear you now.
There we go.
Thank you.
Welcome, Lee, and now TJ.
Hi, TJ,
My
beam me up.
phone or tablet.
Right.
But how do I get that for you?
Welcome, Derek.
Don't you have to sign in?
Kira.
Kira, council staff.
And then I see Steven.
Steven Spano, he's in the referral panel.
And Derek. Think you're muted, Derek.
He's waving high.
Okay, he's here. And then me, Franco, co-chair. So I guess the next thing would be to review and approve the September 3rd draft agenda.
Actually, Franco, can I just ask a question about attendance really quickly?
Sure.
Okay. So, and this would be more towards staff and the co-chairs. Have you guys reached out to, there's a member of this committee. Since January, we've had 8 meetings. They've been absent for 7 and present at 1. And I've looked through the membership minutes and they haven't been notified about anything through the membership committee. I'm just curious if staff has reached out to this person or because maybe it's time that they consider going to another committee if they can't make
I can
the
address this.
committee.
So this is typically an issue we address during membership, since they are really in purview of attendance. And we do go over these kinds of cases, if you will. And staff does a really great job of trying to reach out to all council members, especially when we don't hear from them. So we go through various channels. That's their personal cell phone, their work cell phone, email, all of that snazzy stuff. So we do a really great job. We do, there is kind of a process. That's why I mentioned membership, because they're really in charge of that process. But through our policies, there is a process where we follow that if we don't hear from you for a set amount of time, then that kind of moves towards the path of automatic removal. And that's a really extreme, case, because staff does try to outreach a lot, especially if you don't hear from council members. But I would really encourage you, TJ, to bring this up during membership this month.
Okay, I will. Thanks. And I do know that staff really works hard to get everything going. This was a concern of when this person was voted on, and one of the concerns I brought up. I'm not going to say a name, but just think of a demigod doctor. And if you know everybody's name on the, you'll know who I'm talking about. So, all right. Thank you,
Right.
Pat.
Thank you, TJ. And I see that Nikos has also joined. Nikos, if you don't mind introducing yourself.
Nikos Pecoraro, I use they, them pronouns. I'm a case manager at UCSF Alliance Health Project.
Awesome. Welcome. So moving on again to item number two, to review and approve September 3rd draft agenda. Oh, thank you.
All right, I hope everyone can see that. We have a couple of items on the agenda. We didn't meet quorum last month, so we do still need to approve our August 6th agenda as well as our July 2nd draft minutes. That's why there's kind of those added items in there. Right, any questions about this?
So can we just vote for all three to be approved at the same time as opposed to one individually?
Yeah, I can throw them up. And then if you guys want to do a slate approval, we can totally do that. So I'll go ahead and share that next. All right, these are the July 2nd draft minutes. So I'll scroll through these.
Anybody have any questions on this?
No questions. Okay. And you can just say if there's no objections, we'll approve.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you. So if no objections, we will go ahead and approve those then. Thanks, Lee.
I'm so sorry. I'm pretty new to this. Is someone able to just kind of give me a quick recap of what we're approving?
Yeah, so these are those were the July draft minutes. You typically approve them on a month-to-month basis, but because we didn't meet quorum last month, we couldn't vote on it. So then this is us officially approving those.
Kara, did you note the in the chat about the from Derek Matt the comment there about Mark?
Yes. He let us know that he'd be a few minutes late. All right. And then I'll go ahead and throw up. I have the August 6th agenda. And this was a pretty straightforward agenda as well.
Well, I thought I would be late. Huh.
Right, any comments on the agenda? Seems like none, so it sounds like therefore approved. And I guess before we continue, we can have Mark introduce himself real quick.
Mark Mulmer, council staff.
Awesome, welcome Mark. So it sounds like we've already reviewed and approved all three agenda items. So the next will be any announcements. Going once, going twice. Sounds like none then. So we'll move on to public comment.
No members of the public here.
All right. So now we can move on then to Stephen for the HCAP report.
Thank you all so much. So I apologize. I just got this out to council staff like an hour ago. So I apologize. It's been kind of a short week with a lot crammed in. I'll start by kind of as usual, I'll just highlight a few cases that I think are particularly relevant for this month's report and then make myself available. I did want to start by noting something. I'm always very reluctant to call something a trend because of the small sample set of my clients. If you'll remember last year, I saw 100 unduplicated clients. So 100 clients does not necessarily a trend make, but I did want to highlight something that I foresaw happening and appears to be. On the final page of this report, on page 6, you'll see the graph that I normally provide, which indicates service categories. And on the left-hand side is the total number of cases, and on the right-hand side are the number of referrals. So the total number of cases that are not referrals would include things like advocacy efforts or quality of care issues, filing grievances, sometimes case support, case conferencing and, or other advocacy. Sometimes it's a conflict or a termination or suspension. But the one that I wanted to point out right now is the food category. Food services right now, there are 8 total cases and all 8 of them are referrals. We're about halfway through my contract year. At the end of last year, there were 9. So, this is just kind of an indicator that our clients are continuing to have more challenges meeting their most basic needs. And I just wanted to highlight that because I think it is important for the community to know. Back to page one, I had a new case come in. And I highlight this because I think it illustrates how sometimes direct advocacy is not necessary. But this is an instance where a client was stating that they were being denied housing services on the basis of their immigration status. When I reached out to our government partners, the mayor's office, that kind of instigated a conversation that kind of resolved the problem without me even really needing to speak with the service provider. Just sharing that because sometimes it doesn't require a full, conversation. Sometimes some informal advocacy does the trick. On the second page, you'll see 2025-67. I wanted to share this one in particular because I think it highlights a gap in services. The council and us all as service providers have done a really good job of increasing the income limit to, I think, what is right now, it's at 600% of the federal poverty limit for Ryan White Care Services. This is an instance where we had a long-term survivor. We have a long-term survivor who was referred to me by legal services. Basically, the client is experiencing HIV-associated dementia at a relatively early age, and they're having challenges with their memory, which is causing problems for their housing. So I met with their housing attorney. I spoke with the service providers that provide money management services within our Ryan White Care system and the HHS system. But there is the client, actually was self-employed. And now is kind of experiencing challenges with that, but their income was such that they were ineligible for services through the Ryan White Care program. Moreover, because of their age, they missed the cutoff for age-related services, for senior services. So right here is an instance where a client who has moderately high income, right? I mean, they're not like super wealthy. They just are overqualified. They're over the 600% of FPL to qualify them for services. But to obtain this service on the private market is incredibly expensive. To have a professional fiduciary do this work for them would be very challenging. So I share this, just so that folks understand there is a gap in services for folks who have moderate incomes. And they're not immune to the problems, where they might need these services. We're just requiring them to become more impoverished before they obtain them. Finally, on that same page, I just wanted to share a recent success. This was a case that we've been following, I think, for a couple of months on this report. It's 2025-33. It's the last one on page two. And this is an instance where a client was obtaining residential substance use services and had a relapse. And the response to that felt less than harm reductive for them. So they sought my support in advocating. I was in constant communication with both the service provider and the client working with them. We requested a reasonable accommodation to have them stay in the room that they were in. It kind of seemed like a kind of an incongruous change. I wasn't quite sure why they wanted the client to move rooms as a result of this. And it also posed a significant problem for the client. So we monitored it, we managed it, we requested, we used every legal mechanism that we have available. But in the end, the client was given a behavioral contract. But by the time we wrapped the case, that behavioral contract appeared to be kind of inappropriate. And so I was able to advocate with them to have them count the time that we were advocating and the time that we were supporting toward that behavioral contract to have it completed. And now the client is reconnected to services. So obviously I'm here to support, but that's a recent success. And utilizing the tools that HCAP has available to it in order to support a client through a challenging time. And with that, I'll make myself available for any other questions.
Thank you, Stephen. I believe I saw somebody with their hand raised earlier. I don't know if that was Derek or.
That was me, actually. If we could bring up the chart again, I just had two comments, and one, both of them on your highlighted items, and that is, I'm wondering, well, I'll start with this one, and that is, given the new policy around substance use, I'm wondering if, could you keep us abreast of these sort of instances where people may relapse and are at threat to losing their housing as a result? I just have a, I don't know why, but I have a feeling that this may become a trend in having to advocate for clients in places where abstinence-based policies may threaten their ability to stay housed. I don't know why, but I just have a feeling that that may become a growing trend as well. In regards to
might it be because of Assembly Bill 255?
Well, yes. I'll just put it plain. Yes. Thank you for saying that. But the other thing, and this is the first one, I want to thank you, as always, for your work in advocating for folks, even across non-Ryan white spaces. But I am concerned that, again, this might be a growing trend, as you pointed out, this idea of some of these, as we grow older, those of us that are HIV positive are going to be in spaces that aren't Ryan white, are involved in Ryan white, and having to advocate across those spaces. I don't know how much is occurring now for you, but I know that in me talking to some of the folks that I work with, that is a growing concern, because everyone thinks of the work that you do as being only for Ryan white. And if the concern is outside of that, how much can ARP do? How much would you be able to do in non-Ryan white spaces or concerns?
That's fair. This is not a, this has been mentioned multiple times in public comment, and I know all of the service providers are aware of this. HCAP is not immune to the same challenges that all of the funded service providers experience. That is, the contracts that we have with our government partners do not cover entirely the services that we provide. Put plainly, our HCAP money does not cover my salary, nor does it cover the expenses that the agency takes on for, to have me as an employee. Not that I have an exorbitant salary, but you understand where the rub is on that. And moreover, I don't just do HCAP, right? I report my HCAP clients to you, but I'm also one of the only two notaries here. I draft wills, powers of attorney. I support folks in a variety of different practice areas. So, and I need to do that to maintain the other contracts that cover my salary. I agree with you that long-term survivors are very likely to have to look to other sources for services. One of those agencies I'm hoping will be the Department of Disability and Aging Services. I have advocated to get funding from DAS to mirror that of what HCAP does. And my hope would be that if DAS does throw money at people living with HIV, then they would implement some system like HCAP to help support, the programs and the service providers that they fund and the folks that are accessing them. As of right now, I don't have the capacity to expand in that direction. I think you all know that I've done my best to expand this. I've supported folks outside of the county. I don't count them on our report, and we don't bill for them, of course. But if somebody's trying to access services in Alameda or they're trying to move to Alameda, I don't just let them sit there and be like, go forth and good luck, right? I mean, I try to support to the extent that I'm able. But that's a whole different system of care, right? So I share your concerns. I do think that folks need an advocate. There is, to my knowledge, there is one agency that receives direct funding for legal services in the senior space, and that's the Legal Assistance to the Elderly. They are colleagues of ours. We actually share an office building with them. And we have colleagues that used to work here that work there. So they're very similarly aligned in their mission, to support folks who are accessing, but they do not have a program that is like HCAP. I think you all know HCAP is a unique program in that it seeks to kind of resolve grievances using the least adversarial methods. And that does not necessarily exist. So when a lawyer contacts, one of the agencies that receives DOS funding, they don't necessarily have the same reaction as when I contact the service provider that knows that I'm just seeking to improve service delivery and get a client what they need. So, there's not a clear answer to what you're asking, Derek, but I'm on it, and my finger is on the pulse, and we have colleagues that are helping to advocate in that way. I think I drafted a good proposal, but whether the money is there or not is a whole different, ball game. Does that at all answer your question?
It really does. And it one of the things that I keep thinking about, and I know it's extra work, but would it be worthwhile starting to track these cases to show the sort of not, if not collaborative, at least the sort of intersection that you are entering in between folks that are HIV positive who are in non-Ryan White spaces as a way of highlighting exactly the need for the funding from appropriate agencies that could potentially work and collaborating. There might be an effort, it might be a worthwhile effort at looking at capacity building within those spaces as well, and to the sort of work that you're doing. I forget the process of how you advocate for funders to potentially see the work that is being that overlaps and encourage the creation of what do they call that? RFAs or other sort of granting opportunity, creating granting opportunities either from the state, I hesitate to say feds, but the feds, but also the sort of independent grantors in supporting your work and activities.
Yeah, it's so we do. I do track all of my cases, and I'm very diligent about that. And one of the reasons is because I don't want there to be any misunderstanding that it's not like I have many clients who are you guys never hear about, right? Because they're not HCAP cases, and we wouldn't bill for them. That would be improper. That doesn't mean that we're not always over our goals anyway, our contract requirements anyway. But
Absolutely.
I also want to make clear though that working, it would be a significant undertaking even if we assume for a moment that DOS said, we love the HCAP program, let's fund something like that, and let's use AORP for that. It is not just give us it's not just they give us the money, right? Working with government agencies is work, and it requires learning a whole new system and having somebody to provide, do that monitoring and do it right. I mean, it's the money doesn't just get handed over. It requires a lot of oversight and working with, government as a government contractor, there's just like a significant number of hurdles to overcome. I did try doing what you indicated with regard to working in Alameda. We had a small private grant that allowed me to expand to Alameda during 1 year. I don't know, I want to say it was during COVID, maybe 2020-ish. And the deliverables were not high, but working with the Alameda system of care proved to be a real big challenge, and we weren't even dealing with the Alameda Health Department. So the RFPs and all that stuff is great, and obviously like we want to partner with as many folks as we can to get services out there, but it doesn't come without a cost to the agency, and none of us are flush right now.
Understood. And again, incredible work, Stephen, as always.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you.
And I do just want to pick up on the idea of approaching DOS around funding this. And, and my colleague Jonathan is sort of thinking about how do we get additional funding in the HIV and housing and HIV and aging spaces in particular. So I'm hopeful that we're, even in the context of this current city and administration and so on, that we can figure out some way to shake loose some additional funding. Because I think this kind of work is so important to ensuring that people are able to continue to access the services that they need.
And cost effective. I would hope, but.
Awesome. Well, thank you everyone for your comments and questions, and Stephen for the wonderful job that you're doing. Does anybody else by any chance have any questions before we move forward? All right. Seeing that there's none, we'll move on then to the next topic, which is the resource allocation.
All right, I'll take it from here. This is our annual resource allocation for YOI Part A services for the next YOI year. We developed three scenarios, a scenario for the unlikely event of increased funding, a scenario for the statistically improbable event of flat funding, and a scenario for the likely event of decreased funding. The scenario developed in this committee will then move on to the next committee on the calendar, which will be Council Affairs, and then after that would be membership. Each committee may choose to update the prior committee's work as they see fit and then pass it along for the next committee to do the same. Culminate at the full council meeting, in which they will be looking at a motion that has been reviewed by all committees and penultimately the steering committee, which has a goal of having as many eyes on the scenarios as possible before voting on it, so that it doesn't become a sort of a new event at the full council. Everyone's hopefully fully informed by the scenarios that will come to them at the end of this month. So that's the process. It's also important to know that any decisions made at the September council meeting can also be revised by the council in case, for example, if we do receive increased funding, folks might want to reconvene and come up with a different scenario. And that it goes for each of the scenarios. You're always able to reconvene and redistribute allocation of resources. As a reminder, we only have a mandate over Ryan White Part A. However, our partners over at DPH have also
You extended, I wouldn't say the mandate, more of an advisory capacity for use of general funds, which means that they use the same rationale for prioritization and allocation that that we use for Ryan White Part A funds, which is, I guess, a really good signal of their valuing this partnership. So that's the process. Any questions before we go into the next part, which is actually producing these scenarios? No? All right, I'll share screen. Oh, yes.
So Mark, just out of curiosity, so if somebody's in multiple meetings where this happens, what do you recommend? Do you recommend that they abstain or just have the same vote in each meeting?
It's up to them entirely. As far as my own personal recommendation, actually, my own personal argument would be like follow your own heart, basically. Like if, if you're in multiple meetings, then you're showing the wherewithal to be in multiple meetings. And so if a motion changes, you should vote on that motion if you voted on it previously. If a motion does not change, I'd say the same logic applies. If like if you're there, you're there. The one of the benefits, of course, of a person traveling along with these traveling motions is that they can certainly portray any kind of logic that happened to the last committee. Usually that's what council support does, but council support doesn't vote, let alone come up with these scenarios. So I think there's a benefit for their for being in more than one meeting. And I see you have a thumbs up, so I presume my answer was satisfactory. Excellent. All right. So
I'll just say like, the full council is going to vote on this in the end, and you only get one vote there. So this is all kind of, this is part of the process. The actual vote that counts is the one at the full council that's approving the final recommendations, and the rest of it is just sort of shaping it. So I agree with Mark. I think it is fine if you want to vote multiple times along the way, because that's really just shaping what gets to the full council, and then the full council as a whole has a responsibility for making the decisions on the final recommendations.
Thank you, Laura. Well said. So I'll be sharing screen, and what I'll be sharing are the scenarios that were approved last year. This doesn't mean that you have to automatically put these same scenarios forward, but they do create a sort of a base of discussion. So with that said, let me share screen and we'll go from increased to flat to the most likely scenario, decreased. And we'll need motions and a roll call vote actually for each one. So let's look at the first one. Last year's funding scenario for increased funding reads as such. If increased funding occurs, service category resource allocation will be increased proportionally across all service categories not covered under California's essential health benefits package. I'm going to scroll down here and show you, I think, a note here that specifically says which categories those are. The categories currently covered under the essential health benefits package are primary medical care, mental health services, pharmaceuticals, which we actually do not fund, medical case management, substance use counseling, and dental/oral health. So to explain the logic behind this, you'll see this reappear in last year's decreased funding as well, the idea of sort of a special treatment of those services that are potentially funded under, that are actually funded under essential health benefits package of California. The logic being this, everything that is not covered under this essential health benefits package has a funding challenge, right? If they are defunded, they do not have alternatives to actually replace that funding with other funding streams other than like private fundraising on an agency level. However, those agencies that are a part of the essential health benefits package can turn to California to help continue their funding. And so, therefore, as you'll see in the decreased funding scenario, they'd be able to turn to that if there's reductions. And so that logic was applied then to the increased funding as well, to primarily benefit those agencies that do not have that option. All right, and so with last year's scenario in view, I'll now open up discussion of a potential motion for increased funding.
This is Laura. I'd like to make a motion to approve it as drafted.
Second. All right. And who was that second?
Me.
TJ.
TJ. Okay, great. Thanks. I couldn't see anyone. All right. On the floor is to accept that motion. Any discussion of the motion on the floor before I go to a roll call vote? Okay, so moving swiftly along. Lee Chule.
Yes.
TJ Lee Miyake.
Yes.
Thomas Noble.
Yes.
Nikos Pecoraro. Oh, I don't know if you can vote yet. I'm so sorry to call on you. All right.
Hey, it was tantalizing. It was inviting, so thank you.
I'm sorry.
Shame on you, Mark.
Laura Thomas.
Yes.
Franco Chevalier.
Yes.
Eric Mapp.
Yes.
All right, this will now move on to the Council Affairs. Let me share screen again, and we'll go into our statistically improbable flat funding scenario.
Let's we've come here. Close. We've come
we
close.
Have come close. We have come close. And we actually have once, not once, well, once recently received an increased funding. So, you know, in this world, all dreams are possible. Flat funding. If funding remains at the current level, the scenario last year was to keep everything to remaining level across all categories. So again, this is a fairly straightforward motion. Now the floor is open. I mean, not motion, scenario. Floor is open now for discussion and generation.
I move to approve as written.
All right. Is there a second to that motion?
Second.
Okay, I heard Laura first. So sorry, Derek. We'll go to, any discussion on the motion on the floor? No, seeing none. We'll start with Derek.
Yes.
Laura?
Me, yes.
Franco?
Yes.
Thomas?
Yes.
TJ?
Yes.
Lee?
Yes.
All right, moving right along, we move to our most likely scenario, which is a decreased funding. Let's find that one. Yeah. So as you'll see last year, the scenario that was approved by the full council was this. In the event of decreased funding, for the first 10% of reductions, allocation for services that are covered under California's Essential Health Benefits Package, asterisks below, will be reduced proportionately. If further reduced allocation is required, reductions will occur proportionately across all service categories. So tied in with the logic that I supplied for the increased funding, it's going to hit those services that actually have potential funding under California's Essential Health Benefits Package first for up to a 10% reduction. If the reduction is over 10%, which could happen, we haven't received one like that for quite a long time, then the pain will be shared across every single service category, including those who are not within our essential health benefits package. All right, the floor is now open for generation of motions.
I move that we accept the decreased funding.
All right. Okay, is there a second to that motion?
Second.
Okay, thank you, Derek. Any discussion of the motion on the floor? This is a very swift discussion. I love it. We will start with Laura Thomas.
Aye.
Lee Jewell.
Yes.
TJ Lee Miyake.
Yes.
Derek Mapp.
Yes.
Franco Chevalier.
Yes.
And wait, Thomas, did I call you Thomas Noble?
Yes.
All right. This one, along with the flat funding scenario, will both move along to Council Affairs. Thank you all.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Mark.
I'd like to actually just thank you all in general for co-partnering with council staff and creating such a nice, smooth process. I don't know if any of you have been to other jurisdictions where resource allocation is discussed. It's quite a different affair. Hey, thank you. Thank you all. Nice to work with.
It's Sweet. So it sounds like we've completed the resource allocation voting. So next in the agenda is the needs assessment and COLA updates.
Yeah, and I can take that. So I'll start with needs assessment first. We are currently at 52 participants for the needs assessment, which is a really big jump from the last time I think I reported, which is around 30-ish. So yay, that was like, I think I was talking with Mark and Kat, and we were talking about how that was our personal goal, get at least over 50. That's a really good number. And we will also be presenting at this full council's meeting. So you will see our finished report this month. besides that, I think we are still currently taking more participants.
I wanted to just have a last word after you finish the needs assessment part. So please continue. Sorry.
Okay. We are still currently taking more participants in general. So I think I do have around two more people scheduled. So hopefully we do get a little bit more. But we will be showcasing, I guess, the draft presentation at next week's council affairs for that. And that's all I have to say.
Yeah, three things. First of all, thank you very much, Kira and Kat, for all of your work on this. I know that this has been an ongoing process. I also know that it's enjoyable work, too. So I just want to say thank you both for doing literally all of this work. I contributed very little besides being a good sounding board, hopefully. So this was truly led by the two of you, and I really appreciate you both. The second thing is that I'm just also very happy we're finally sort of back on track to pre-pandemic. It only took 5 years, but if you recall, we used to have the needs assessment prior to prioritization allocation. That is a best practice. But since the pandemic, it's been a challenge to get numbers enough to come before the council before prioritization allocation. This is one of our mandated activities from HRSA, and it is supposed to feed into sort of our decision-making. So it's just great to be back on track finally in 2025 to where we were in 2019. 2019. It has been that long. Third, I do encourage any community engagement committee members to certainly join us at Council Affairs. If you'd like to preview this presentation, you all were a big part of this as well. You know, you reviewed and literally updated the survey tool, as well as helped Kira and Kat out a lot with lots of suggestions about where to reach clients and different groups to connect with. And some of you specifically even sent clients our way. Thank you very much, particularly Derek. So if you would like to appear at Council Affairs to see the product of all of your work, please come. I felt like a speech, but I did not prepare.
Well, wonderful. Thank you all for that amazing work. Looking forward to seeing the information that you all collected. So from there, I think just a reminder of the next meeting. Looks like
October. Oh, I think Kira had a quote.
Oh, sorry. Apologies, Kira. Go ahead.
So we do have a COLA target that I do want to discuss, and I do hopefully want to vote on this today. During our last couple of meetings, we've talked about a potential COLA target, and a lot of people seem to really be in favor of focusing on the undocumented community this year as a COLA target. And I did have a discussion with Marco, actually, to kind of figure out a best way to outreach to folks. And he actually seemed pointed me in the way of an established support group. So there would be a way to do this in person and with participants directly who identify as part of this community, because I know an idea was floated around maybe instead of outreaching to people who are undocumented directly, we would outreach to providers of those services. But it seems like there is an established support group that we could kind of sit in on. So how do folks feel? Any discussion about this?
Sorry, Kara, specifically what population?
The undocumented community.
Okay.
Can I just ask for clarification, Kira? This support group that you're mentioning, is it specifically targeted to like a specific subgroup of the population, or is it like a general like support group for just anyone that's undocumented?
This sounded like it was a general, it was a people living with HIV who are undocumented.
And given the agency, I assume that the population would certainly skew Latino, Latina, Latinx.
Yeah, and it does also sound as if they're monolingual speaking, so they are Spanish speaking folks. So that'd be something that we would work on.
And I guess another question that I had is there, I don't know if this is something that's possible or not, but I know like ALRP works a lot with individuals seeking refuge or undocumented individuals. I don't know if there's a way to perhaps try to capture some individuals that might be there that might be interested or open to sharing some information, or is that, I don't know if that would sort of go into like all the specifics of confidentiality, et cetera. So,
well, part of our methodology is we host in-person focus groups, and then we also do conduct one-on-one interviews. So I'm sure I could work with Stephen and see if maybe you could send folks our way.
Yeah, I was gonna recommend the same thing, and I'm wondering about Mission Neighborhood Health.
Mm-hmm. I think working with the COEs might be and maybe even setting up space there would be a good way. But I'd have to speak with our immigration attorney on that, and I'm not sure how comfortable folks would be. I'm happy to have a conversation with the immigration attorney. I just don't know what that would look like. What would be helpful is if you want to send me an email just delineating what your, you know, what your vision is, and then I can forward that over.
Thanks, Stephen.
Yeah, of course. If I can help, I will. You know that.
I wonder if I could jump in before other folks, just as a clarification of like what COLAs might be and what we might want to look to for the future. I appreciate suggestions, obviously, from Franco and Stephen's willingness to partner on this and Kira's willingness to meet these ideas. But this is a focus group. This is a specific focus group. I think people can be invited inside the focus group, but it would actually depend on the focus group itself. If they feel like they want other folks who are not part of their sort of familiar milieu to actually enter this situation, I think given the fact that this is a particularly challenged community at this point, there might be like feelings around like, I actually only want to deal with folks who are part of this intimate support group community. And it is a COLA, not a needs assessment. However, I do think the idea of perhaps immigrants in general as a needs assessment target, hey, perhaps for next year, would be a powerful one, particularly given the different challenges we're experiencing with the current administration. I would not want, because a COLA is supposed to be fixed on one particular setting in one location to give a snapshot of what this particular group feels, I wouldn't want Kira to sort of hear a lot of different suggestions about try this place, try that place, because that to me then is a needs assessment, not rather than a snapshot of a focus group. Again, I would encourage us to sort of keep this population in mind when choosing targets for next year, but I would want us to also to sort of recognize the fact that this is a particular kind of assessment with that said.
Got it. Thanks, Mark, for the clarification. So I wrote down by the show of hands that came up in my screen. I think Thomas first, then TJ, then Laura. So,
yeah, I just wanted to get clarity specifically with the groups. Undocumented is a pretty broad statement, but I think there's an implicit bias with regards to specifically the Spanish speaking. Immigrant experience. And so I'm wondering if other folks are implying that with the concept, and are we talking about, and then even Latinos, the kind of the Brazilian experience as well. So are we saying monolingual Spanish speaking undocumented folks, or are we saying immigrants, or anywhere in between? And I'm not really choosing a lane. I just want to make sure that we're specific with regards to what we're talking about.
I think it will be specific to what that group actually is. So if she's meeting with this group, the parameters of the group would be as the group self-identifies. So the original parameters were discussed by this particular committee, and that was folks who were undocumented. And then as far as the specifics beyond that, as far as Spanish speaking versus Portuguese speaking, et cetera, all good things to be aware of, that would be set by what the group itself is. And so Carol would be specific, actually, when she provides her report back to the council that this is I met with this group that had these particular identifiers. They were monolingual Spanish speakers, for example, could be one of those identifiers. Does that would you agree with that, Kira? I don't mean to speak for you, but I'm fast. I'm fast on straw.
No, yeah. You took the words right out of my mouth.
Awesome. And then with that, TJ, you're up next.
Yeah, thanks, Thomas, for bringing up your comments. I would also be, I would probably want to see it a little more broad for a needs assessment next year, because the Asian communities are, you know, diverse and hit pretty well. And so if we could maybe ask staff to put for just a possible idea when we go to review the needs assessment things and a broader immigrant experience, I would
absolutely appreciate. Yeah, I mean I think it's something that the committee could also do. Like, we could literally come up on the spot with the whole range of immigrant communities that are in that exist in general in San Francisco, but also perhaps are feeling a certain level of pressure right now.
Mm-hmm. All right, with that, Laura, you're up next.
Yeah, that I think that's part of my concern. One is I feel like, one is I absolutely want to hear from folks in these communities about what their needs are. And I think that their needs are, there are specific unique needs for folks with a variety of immigrant statuses, and their reliance on the Ryan White system is probably going to increase dramatically over the next few years. And that said, given what's happening at the federal level, I'm very concerned about us doing anything that is labeled as, either asking people their documentation status at any point in this process. I think we do not want to be asking people their documentation or immigration status. We don't want to be collecting information on it. We don't even want to be implying that we are providing services to folks that are undocumented, even though we certainly are. And it's fine for consumers to know that, but I'm really wary of us being in a position where we are sending anything to HRSA that said, for example, we asked undocumented folks what they want from this system of care, because even though I do think that is in a perfect world, that is best practice, is for us to know what the needs are for folks who are undocumented. But I think at this point, it's really dangerous for us to be saying that we are collecting that information in that way. And, so I think, either the suggestion that we just look at folks with some sort of immigrant experience, where we're not looking at what is their legal status. We're not, are they, a refugee, asylum seeker, undocumented, current, now a citizen, green card. Like, if there's some way that we can talk about immigrant experience, or even like years in San Francisco, I don't know. I don't want us to be in a position of having information that could in any way compromise people's ability to stay in this country. Which I think just collecting the data, unfortunately, like there was just an article in the paper today about, the Trump administration's asking the city and county of San Francisco for our voter registration information to try to identify if there are folks who are undocumented in there. And none of the information will be kept confidential when it gets to the federal level anyway. So I'm sorry to be throwing like a wrench in this. It is a really good idea to collect this data, and it's a community of folks that we need to make sure that we are serving appropriately.
You know, thank you, Laura, for raising those points. I know that Derek had his hand raised before. I don't know, Derek, if you still have questions or comments to make before I continue with the rest.
Actually, Laura said it very well, as usual. But my thoughts were around what she was just bringing up, and which made me think if we wanted to still go ahead, that it would be better to approach providers of services to those with immigrant experience rather than, but it would be really interesting to hear directly. I don't know why I keep on thinking like it still is really good to hear from consumers themselves somehow, and this perhaps would be the closest that we could get and still shield the individuals.
Totally. All right, I can't remember who raised their hand first, but it's between Mark and Lee, so I'm just gonna go with Lee and then Mark, that's okay.
No, I just appreciate Laura's perspective, and I think I'm wondering if we might want to bring language back to this committee or make sure that the language is reviewed appropriately so everyone can contribute to making sure that we're addressing the need of what we want to accomplish, but also paying particular attention to the concern that Laura's raising.
Definitely not. Thank you, Lee and Mark.
Yeah, I absolutely support what Laura said. I'm really glad that she went over the different challenges that we're experiencing, even with data collection. I think that's very important for us to be aware of. So for next year, obviously, if this community is chosen, we should strip it of any language that's even associated with documentation. And I think the phrase that Laura used is actually quite perfect, of immigrant experience, however that is so defined. And I think we'll still be able to get some good data that way, while not actually treading across lines that we possibly shouldn't. And as far as this particular COLA, I certainly would ask that kind of language be not a part of any kind of report or reporting back to, you know, we have publicly recorded meetings, as this one is, but even though there is a particular group that Kira is reaching out to, and I think should still continue to reach out to, that language that we've been discussing now, that Laura mentioned, not be a part of that. And we're not going to lose sight of any of the issues, but we do have to, in many ways, be aware of our surroundings.
Yeah, I think it was TJ who said immigrant experience, not me. I think I was just
thank you, TJ.
Language. So, and I do, you know, it's still worth doing the assessment and getting the information. I think it's really just about like how we talk about it, especially in any public facing ways.
Thank you both. Stephen, I see your hand raised as well.
Yeah, just a quick question. I think I know the answer to this, but I do want to confirm that the COLAs, the COLAs and needs assessments, those are done anonymously, right? Personal information, personally identifying information available?
Nope. We only ask folks for their first name, and they can really give us any name they want.
Okay. Okay. I put something in the chat. I'm not the person to ask questions about this too. I don't practice immigration law, but we are all being forced to learn something about it just to support the community, which I'm happy to do. But I did put something in there, you know, the public charge rule can affect somebody's immigration status and their ability to obtain a green card. And so I put some very cursory information in there from the Human Services Agency. And I would just encourage folks to take a look at that.
Awesome. Thank you, Stephen. I just wanted to add a comment myself too in regards to the NITS assessment for like future years. I do love the idea of like the immigrant experience, as TJ sort of coined it, but I would also say that it would be interesting perhaps or thought provoking to also approach it from the providers and the care team perspective who provide care to immigrant communities, which may include undocumented folks as well, to see, because I do think, at least from my perspective as a provider myself, there are many times that as providers, we may not necessarily be completely aware of all the different resources and things in ways to support, to best support like our patients and clients that come in to see us. And while, you know, we have great resources here and there, I do wonder like if that is across the board and whether or not there's specific needs that we could also be potentially looking into bridging for providers and also overall care teams from like case managers to social workers and things like that, and how to best navigate this this community in general as well. So I just wanted to throw that out there. Mark, I see your hand raised.
A couple of things. First, to respond to what you're saying, we have done needs assessments prior to 2020 that actually did include a provider component. So that's something we can bring back. It requires in some ways similar things and different things. So similar things being we've asked providers to actually do their own prioritization as well, the same sort that we ask clients. Always interesting to compare and contrast what the needs are seen by the actual consumers versus by the providers of care. So we could do something like that, as well as bring a tool to you all to specifically ask providers about, whether that's an in-person or like a survey tool. We have done those kinds of things before. We don't do that for every needs assessment, but we could certainly do it for next year's if the committee so requests. And I think that will be really rich and robust information. Honestly, the more information, the better around this these multiple communities, I think. And the second thing is, like, there does appear to be energy around this, and just to sort of keep us on track with making sure that, like, we continue our success in getting the needs assessment to the council before prioritization and allocation next year, similar to our win this year. I'm wondering, Kira, if you wouldn't mind actually bringing determining needs assessment target for 2026 to this committee in November, so that we actually don't start it next year, and then we can come to the full council either in November or January, and then you'll just have a more time, honestly, next year to spend on it. What do you think about that, Kira?
I think that's a good idea. That's exactly what I was thinking as we're having this conversation.
Oh, good. Again, we are of the same mind.
Awesome. Any other questions for Kira around the COLA update or the NITS assessment in general?
I do want to clarify. So I do want folks to vote on this now. And so I do want to clarify the word or the verbiage that is being used. So previously I had mentioned that we were looking at the undocumented community, but I think as TJ and Laura kind of highlighted and pointed out, the verbiage to better use is people living with HIV who have immigrant experience. How does that settle with folks?
If folks appreciate that as agree with that as sort of what this target would be, then we'll just need someone to motion and second. I mean, move and second.
A motion.
I'll motion that.
Hey, TJ, and then Lee second.
Awesome. Okay. Looks like we have a COLA target then.
Oh, any opposed? Sorry. Okay. Any opposed to this target?
Awesome. So I think if I'm correct now, the next point would be the next meeting, which is in October 1st, 2025, when it will happen via Zoom. Other than that, I believe we have covered all the things in the agenda. Does anyone want to make a motion to adjourn this meeting?
Oh, no need. We can just do it automatically.
Beautiful. All right. Then in that case, we can just adjourn. Thank you all for being here. And thank you for bearing with me during my first conduction of this meeting.
Thank you, Franco.
Oh, well, no, great job.
Yeah. Good job.
I would not have known that, actually.
Good job, Franco. Awesome.
Thank you all. Can you stay on?